Actually, my three-year-old daughter chose it for us.
Okay.
So that was the shock when we said we have a family meeting on choosing our values. My three-year-old daughter put up a hand and say, I know. I explained because I was scared that she would say something strange. And I said, no, remember, whatever you choose, we are going to do this. So if you think watching TV is a high value, you must say. And she just insisted, we must serve the poor children. So she changed our lives because the others agree with her and they outvoted mom and dad actually. And so they
agree. Less spiritual ones.
Yeah, the less spiritual ones. And then God, through the three-year-old daughter, actually brought this value to us. Now, 30 years later, we are saying, praise God.
You're listening to Focus on the Family, and that was our guest on the program yesterday, speaking about being intentional about setting family values. I'm Alison Schnell, and your host is Focus CEO, Graham Schnell.
Alison, you used the word intentional, and I think that's so key, whether it's about setting values or the atmosphere we create at home, or whether it's about discipline and boundaries. We have to be intentional if we want our kids to become healthy, thriving, God-honoring adults one day.
Yeah.
That is our responsibility as parents. And at Focus, we want to help you with that. That's why we're here.
Absolutely. And today we're continuing with the conversation you had with Cassie and Jenny Carstens. Cassie's book and movement is called The World Needs a Father, and that forms the basis of our program. I think this is really going to help you both, moms and dads, in your parenting. But let's go now to the second part of your interview with Cassie and Jenny Carstens.
Fathers have such a vital role to play in the lives of their children. You just can't get around that. And part of our role here at Focus on the Family is to help parents raise their kids with biblical values. And we want to support and encourage you as parents. And we know that parenting isn't easy, and there are no perfect parents, so we're not here to lay a guilt trip. But we must also sometimes put out a challenge because it is so important. And this program, I think, fits into that category, challenging dads particularly to be the dads that their kids need. And last time we had a great conversation with Cassie and Jenny Carstens. Cassie's the founder of the movement and the author of the book with the same title, The World Needs a Father. Welcome back to Focus on the Family to both of you.
Thank you, Graham.
Thank
Good
you.
To be here.
Well, Cassie, we started last time just speaking into this aspect of bringing heaven home and how fathers particularly have a responsibility to do that. And we touched on the four roles that a father has to play or needs to play in the life of their child. And we really only hit on identity as the primary one, but we've still got that emotional security, the affirmation, and the moral authority. Will you go through those just in a little bit more detail before we get into the rest of this program today?
Yeah. I think if we take identity, for instance, so understanding who you are in Christ and you transfer this with the children, then at least you lay a good foundation already.
Yeah.
But then if you would go to Jesus now and say, Jesus, what is the most important job of a father? Now, very few fathers think about this. Jesus will not tell you he must be a provider. He will tell you, love is the thing, you know, so you got to love like God. And he basically demonstrated God's love to us.
Yeah.
So love like me. This is John 13:34-35. I give you a new law, and that new law is love one another as I have loved you. Mm-hmm. Now, unfortunately, fathers have not been trained in that kind of love. Yeah. So they use the word love. I love my wife, I love the dog, I love
ice cream
and golf,
yeah.
And so on. But what is the distinction in that love? What makes it so unique? So fathers must first unlearn the general understanding of love, because the general understanding of love is I love myself first and then I love you.
Yeah.
That is the Old Testament love, eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. That's very close to that.
Mm.
And we mix the Old Testament love with the New Testament love. The new law is not love others as yourself, meaning love yourself first and then others. And it's preached like that all over the world.
Yeah.
It's not the new one. The new one is love others first. And the guy at the cross challenged Jesus and said, save yourself first and then us. And Jesus declined because he wanted us to know, I love others first.
Yeah.
I did not come to be served, but to serve. Mm. And in loving others, we love ourselves. So now we have to unlearn a mix between Old Testament and New Testament love, and we got to get the pure New Testament love, which is a love which is, we call it unconditional. But what does it mean? It means you have no expectations. No expectations means no irritations. Yeah. And the higher your pride, the higher your expectation, and the higher your irritation. Yeah. And we can have a marriage without conflict. I honestly believe that. But then we got to tear up our expectations. And I had to learn this in the hard way in my marriage. But that was the key to heaven at home. Sure. The key to heaven at home is one thing. And that is that Jesus kind of love, that selfless, sacrificial love. Yeah. That's the door to heaven. There's no other door to heaven at home. So if both are selfless and the kids are selfless, then they don't look for what they can get. They always look for what they can give. Hmm. So there's no contractual thing, you know, if I've given so much. You know, I get so many people in counseling that say, I've given so much. Now it's my time. I said, praise God if you've given so much. The more you give, the more you are like Jesus. So it's if you can adopt that giving attitude, it's all about giving. Hmm. I'll just give and give without expectation, without return. Yeah. And if all in the family has that inclination of it's all about giving, that you call heaven.
Sure.
So the only struggle we have is who's going to make the tea, because I want to make the tea and then she wants to make me tea or whatever it is. And then who's going first, actually, you know. Yeah. But how beautiful is that? Yeah. So you sit back and you say, there's no one with a demanding spirit. Yeah. There's no one with the attitude of you owe me. Everyone is just so full of Jesus that they want to pour it out to others. And they pour from that overflowing cup because they don't get their cup filled by the other person. They get it from God. Yeah. He fills the cup. He is the God. He pours it into us and we just a channel of what we have received freely. So that atmosphere of love, of selfless sacrificial love, unlocks heaven in a big way for everyone.
Yeah. And what does that fit into in terms of the roles? Because so you've talked about the identity. That love, is that the affirmation that you're giving? Or is that
That's the second. If we come back to the framework from Father to Son, Jesus.
Okay.
This is my son identity, whom I love. That's the second one.
Okay.
So obviously it complements the first one beautifully.
Okay.
But it is the second one.
Yeah.
And then... with whom I'm well pleased, he says. Now, affirmation, now we have an added thing. Firstly, the love creates that emotional security. Yeah. But another thing that creates emotional security is the way you do things.
Yeah.
We've talked about that, the atmosphere that you create already.
Yeah.
In that way you do things, if we can replace correctional relationship with affirming relationship, and I think most parents, they want to correct the children.
Yeah.
But they have discovered that affirmation is a much stronger educator than correction.
Sure.
So if I can replace correction with affirmation, then it means my whole focus is not what do you do wrong. My whole focus is what do you do right.
Yeah.
And then I affirm that.
Yeah.
So I'm looking for a child, and it could be a small little thing like he carried a plate to the kitchen or he put his arm around his sister or whatever it is. Then I affirm this very strongly. And because they are affirmed in the good things, they want to do more good things.
Yeah.
Instead of no. So we are saying to fathers, please say six yeses before you say one no. So find that good thing, whatever it is, smile, any small little good thing, and affirm that, then the child wants to become good because it's affirmed.
Yeah.
And then you have to correct much less.
So it's catching them doing things right and then just praising them for that.
That's it.
So we've spoken of identity, emotional security, touched on affirmation. The other one is moral authority. And you spoke a bit about that. That comes from that Mount of Transfiguration.
Yeah,
listen to him.
Actually, what helps us in this understanding a lot is Deuteronomy 6. Because what you get there is, these are my decrees, commands, da-da-da-da. You know, it sounds very heavy when it starts. These are my decrees, my commands, da-da-da. And then it says, if you do this, you will live a long life. You will move into a country that will flow with milk and honey. You will enjoy life. It says all of those.
Yeah.
So the decrees, God's commands, God's authority is not given to break us down, but to build us up.
Yeah.
It is to give us the best. So if you understand rules, that rules create the best possibility for us, then you also understand rules in the house in the same way. So, for instance, to give you a funny example, I came into the house one day and the frames, the metal frames of the windows were rattling because my 12-year-old teenage daughter had the music on at full volume. And I came in, I couldn't even hear myself think. And so I walked to her. I said, "Do you want to play your music as loud as this?" And she said, "Yes, Daddy." Yeah. So I said, "Okay, we want to create heaven for everyone. So which means if you want to play your music as loud as that, great. Then I'll play my music as loud as that as well." And she stopped and she said, "You want to play your music loud, Daddy?" I said, "Yes." She said, no, you cannot. You can, because I like classical music and she hates it. At that stage, she hated it. And so she said, "No, you are not going to play your music as loud as this." Yeah. So I said, "Okay, remember the rules are there for everyone to make everyone comfortable in this house. So which means what?" And I think she probably said, "Then we'll have to use earphones."
Yeah.
So I said, "What a great idea." It took me 1.5 minutes. But if the whole thing is whatever rule is there is for everyone to create it, create comfort for everyone. Yeah. So if I say you must never be late, and she comes in after 5, she's creating anxiety for mom and dad and everyone else. That's not creating heaven.
Yeah.
So if you say 5, it's 5. But that means if that is the rule for the house, then dad must also be there if he says 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
He can't create anxiety for the rest. Mm. So whatever rule is there counts for everyone.
Yeah.
But the rule is not to restrict you. The rule is to give you life.
Yeah.
And if the approach of authority is just good, then it's great. And then you read the Bible, not only the nice parts of the Bible, the grace and glorious and happiness parts, but also the what's called the tough parts, you know, that sounds restrictive, is actually channels for better life. So if, for instance, so I never said to my son, "You can't have sex outside marriage," because it sounds restrictive.
Yeah.
So I said to my son, "George," and this is as he grew up into his teenage years, "George, do you want to have heaven in sex one day?" And he looked at me, you know, not knowing what's coming. And then he said to me, "That sounds good, Daddy." So I said, "Okay, I'll tell you what is heaven in sex. Heaven in sex is if you marry as a virgin and you marry a virgin, and the day after marriage, and your honeymoon day, and you had sex together, the next morning when you sit at the breakfast table and you look into her eyes and you say, 'You are the only one.'" And she responds, "You too." When that happens, my son, you will know this is heaven. So if you want to go there, then you have to restrict yourselves from things that can prevent you from this heaven.
Sure.
In sex specifically now.
Yeah.
And that counts for all other things as well. Same with money. Sometimes you just want money for the sake of money. You know, it becomes an idol. But you're actually killing yourself because you're serving a God that is very greedy and that can really kill you in the process of serving him. While Jesus said contentment is the alternative, that you can have even little, but you have a heart filled with contentment. You want to go there? That's heaven. Concerning finances, concerning possessions. So, and if people can only understand this, that Jesus came to give life and life abundantly. And if this authority is not to restrict you, but the authority is to take you to this new place of fulfillment, heaven, abundance, milk and honey, then it's not too difficult.
So the rules become a framework to create the atmosphere of heaven. And that's what
channel to heaven.
Constantly coming back to that.
Yeah.
There's a purpose behind them. I like what you shared there as well. It's not just do what I say because I said it. It's actually this is the reason. It's because we're trying to facilitate something. Yeah, that's why there's rules that it applies to me as it applies to you.
Yeah.
And I can understand that then.
Exactly that sentence that you've just said, this is sometimes the attitude. Do this because I've said it. Yeah. Can you see when you say that sentence, "I have said it," that makes you the authority. And that must never be your approach. God is the authority. So you just channel his authority. So, and when it comes to a rule that you don't necessarily read in the Bible, like playing the music at a certain thing, then it's a principle like remember, whatever we create as a rule here is to benefit all.
Mm.
It's not to benefit me over against you. We're not competitors here. We are both submitted to this rule, and we are companions in the submission to the rule. The dad is a companion with the children in the submission to the rule.
Yeah. That's fantastic. I'm just wondering about the father or even the mother that's listening to this program and saying, this sounds amazing and I want to try and put this into practice, but they've got deep wounds in their own heart based on their own experience. And Jenny, maybe I can start with you, because as much as we're speaking primarily to fathers in this program, there are both men and women who've had a wound from something that happened with their own mother that's caused an inability for them maybe to live this out in its complete fullness. And then I want to speak about father wounds. But just to share, you know, what how does that outplay itself, and how do what would you say to that person who's maybe battling because of a wound that's there as a result of their mother?
You know, the most common mother wound are caused by a lack of nurture and care or a lack of intimacy. Mm. And specifically intimacy, if you haven't had a mother who had that connection with you, who wasn't a friend to you, or wasn't there, that lack of intimacy plays into your attitude and your behavior with your husband and with your children.
Sure.
So,
particularly on that,
yes,
in the area of intimacy.
Specifically on intimacy, because connection, connecting with the eyes, it could be a fear of intimacy. It could be a great longing for more and more intimacy, but the ability to connect can be a deep wound. Another one, of course, is nurture and care. If you haven't had that nurturing and caring from your mother, specifically at an early age, then you've always got that fear or anger when you feel, I'm not nurtured. My husband is not nurturing me. He's not caring for me. Mm-hmm. You overreact and you become very verbal and you become very angry. Mm-hmm. And in myself, you know, I realized it after a while that why am I getting so angry when I'm not feeling loved or not feeling understood? Mm-hmm. And it was because of that wound. Sure. And it plays into your relationship with your husband and it actually has this negative influence. And once you understand where it comes from and you can share it with each other, that he can share his wounds with me and I can share my wounds with him, because very often our wounds have a deeper negative effect, because he is wounded in a different way that I'm wounded, and they play negatively into each other. But once we understand where we come from and how we can receive healing in these areas and become more secure in that, that our relationship becomes closer and more intimate.
So it's actually needs that are not unhealthy needs in their own right, but they're almost exaggerated.
Yes.
And then it becomes unhealthy because you're not receiving enough and you're kind of getting angry
feeling threatened, and it touches a nerve, it touches a button.
Okay.
And so certain buttons are just touched, and then you surprise, he surprise, where is this coming from?
Yeah.
And then it can escalate, of course. Sure. But once you understand, why am I so angry, you know, why did I react? Because it could also be in the workplace.
Yeah.
It could be with your children. Yeah. And very often you carry a wound over to your children as well if you don't deal with it.
And so much is just recognizing, understanding it.
Yes.
And then there's place for healing. What about that father wound?
Yeah, can I just add on to that? Unless you identify the wound, you will struggle to get healing off the wound.
Yeah.
Now, the father wound again. Now, what we've got to understand here is the wound is not because of an abusive father only, physically abused or whatever.
Yeah.
That as well plays into it, of course, because he's supposed to create the emotional security, not the emotional threat. So that is a big one. But we've got moral wounds as well. The neglect of what is right or what is wrong. Your father was not a morally good person, for instance.
Yeah.
And so you've got no guidelines in your mind on right and wrong, for instance.
Mm.
Or a very important one, between 6 and 8, there your self-worth is established quite heavily. So if the father did not give you affirmation between 6 and 8, you don't have the confidence later on. Yeah. So now you have all the potential to do a great thing. But the moment that you step into the crunch of the situation, you don't have the confidence to pull through. Sure. And so, and also identity. People that feel, I don't know who I am. That's basically because fathers did not tell you or help you through understanding who you are. Because the affirmation of the father on who you are looks like a stronger solidifying of identity than anything else in your life.
Sure.
So now, having neglected any of the 4 roles of the father or any of the 5 roles of the mother, leaves the child with a deprivation, with deprived of this, deprived of that, deprived of that. And we call that wounds, or we even call it insecurities.
Yeah.
And then you start to parent out of your woundedness, out of your insecurity, out of your deprivation. And that is where you have calamity in your parenting and also in your marriage. And then that needs to be restored by a specific process of restoration.
And how, just give us maybe the brief of how do you restore that? What can somebody practically do? If they're listening now and they've recognized that, or they just know from their own experience, there's definitely a wound.
We'll give you the very short version of this. Identifying first. Secondly, forgiveness of father and mother. There's just an unlocking of God's grace through forgiveness.
Yeah.
Essential.
Sure.
And that must be done in a specific way. And then inner victory. Inner victory is the exchange of the lies that Satan built on your insecurity and that you are walking with in your mind as a conviction. And you got to change your brain patterns by exchanging the lie with the truth of the Bible and then act on the truth. And so that is a practice. Actually, Caroline Leaf says 63 times. Without doing one wrong in between. Otherwise, you've got to start over. And then your brain pattern is changed.
Sure.
But you can change your brain patterns on this.
So it's being transformed by the renewing of the
mind. The mind. That's it. And it's a long process of victory.
Yeah.
And then the fourth one, we honestly believe, don't try it alone. You need partners on this journey.
Yeah.
So we call it the table of support. You need people that can walk with you, overcoming your insecurities or your woundedness, and be victorious.
Yeah. Cassie, Jenny, thank you so much for being with us. Thank you for this book, The World Needs a Father, Helping Fathers Bring Heaven Home. We really appreciate you being with us.
Thank you, Graham.
Thank you, Graham. Appreciate it so much.
That was so good. I hope you've been both challenged and equipped. And I really want to encourage you to get a copy of The World Needs a Father. This book will take you deeper into how, as a father, you can establish moral authority, confer identity, provide security, and affirm potential in your kids. You can order your copy by calling 031-716-3300 or by visiting our website at safamily.co.za. And remember, the only way we can keep helping families is through your prayers and financial support. Focus on the Family is your ministry, and your gift enables us to share biblically based teaching through this broadcast and other programs. We can offer counseling, provide books and tools, and we can continue our work with orphans and vulnerable children. You can partner with us by clicking donate on our website or by calling 031-716-3300. It's been great to have you with us today. I'm Alison Schnell for Focus on the Family Africa, inviting you to join us next time when we'll, as always, help you and your family thrive in Christ.